The most recent one that I remember chuckling at was a t-shirt. It was like an election year t-shirt that had Cthulhu on it. And it said, Lord Cthulhu. And then the slogan was, why vote for the lesser evil? You
know? Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I thought it was really good. I'm Harry Nichols. I am a singer-songwriter. I am an English teacher. And what else? I always say the same things when I do this. What are some different things that I am? I'm a dad. Let's throw that in there.
Yeah, there's a new one.
of two small children who I took bowling for the first time today. And they absolutely had a blast. And
oh my God, that's very cute.
It made them pass out very early, so that was great.
So now you're going to need to take them bowling more often?
Yeah. Well, what I find is that actually what makes them fall asleep is not that it's a physically strenuous activity, although sometimes that helps, but more about neurological new experiences that their brains have to process. Uh-oh. That's really what knocks
them out. So you need
more
new experiences.
Which is, that's hard, right? You got to keep reinventing the wheel.
Okay, yeah, that is hard.
Yeah. So Jerry, will you, Jen, will you please tell us about yourself?
And, we'll get into why I'm Jerry on this podcast in a minute, but I'm Jen Lightfoot and I am a tattoo artist and an artist. And I always say the same things too.
Yeah.
So what is something different that I can say?
You always tell us what you're drinking.
I do. It's not as creative as last time. Mm. This time is just a Corona. Yeah, that's it. That's Cricket. It. I didn't mix Cricket. Any weird shit. Yeah. Let's see. I'm a cat lady. I'll just put that out there. If I could have like a million cats, I would. I'd be that old lady with a house with like a room just for cats. To be fair, just to let everyone know, I only have two cats. So I'm not at that point of my life yet, but working towards it.
So today we're talking about
older gods.
Yes. A Wagyu film.
Mm-hmm.
This was kind of fun for me, Jen. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. No, this was
definitely
a lot of fun.
Do you want to just quickly recount the story of how we came to be on the fly talking about this movie?
Yeah. So this is not a movie that had crossed our paths, or that at least I had not heard of it before. Wagyu Films reached out to us on Instagram and basically asked if we wanted to review the movie. And they sent us a link. Now, here is the part of why I am Jerry on this podcast, because on the special link just for us, it says, and I'll post a picture of this to Instagram too, but it says Harry and Jerry do horror.
Yeah. Well, they included this. There's a watermark on the film. Yes, so I guess so that we won't steal it too, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And you know, reproduce it and put it out online without their consent. And so they watermark it, which is very smart to do. It was just funny for me because it keeps coming up as we're watching the movie. Sometimes at very intense climactic parts.
Right? And then you're just like, oh my God, what is happening? And then you just see Harry and Jerry.
Harry and Jerry do horror.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Harry texted me and was like, have you watched it yet? You're Jerry now.
I was saying, when I texted, I was saying that it made me feel legit to have the watermark there, because it's like the name of the show. And I was like, oh, yes, how dignifying. But then also they got the name wrong. So like, shrug emoji. Yeah. So we don't have a guest this time, just the two of us, which is cool. So this is like, you know, we're going to do this. I guess we're going to call this a bonus episode, even though it's going to follow the same format that we always do, just the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a little bit shorter. So Older Gods, right? Came out 2023.
Yes.
It's very recent. It's a December release. Directed by David A. Roberts. Mm-hmm. As I'm pulling up his name. Sorry, David. I will summarize this. I will attempt summarize.
Yeah.
I never get to summarize. We always make our guests summarize. So this film is about a man. His name is Chris. He's investigating his friend Billy's apparent suicide by visiting the site of Billy's supposed suicide, which is a picturesque cottage in the sort of moorlands of Wales, right?
Yeah, I think it's Wales.
Yeah. As he's there with a whole bunch of materials that he has been given by his deceased friend, though we don't know how. And as he's investigating, he uncovers the strange cult that his friend was investigating at the time of his death. And as we uncover more and more, it becomes apparent that the cult had more to do with Billy's death than really just like a plain old-fashioned suicide. Chris also should be noted, like, has kind of unceremoniously left for this little investigative vacation, right? He's got like a wife and like a pregnant wife back yep. home mm-hmm. who like didn't know he was leaving.
Yep.
And he's got people calling him from the States, you know, saying like, where are you? What the fuck are you doing? So there's this like, there's that element to it as well. I would say in the end, Chris also is tempted to descend into like a cosmic madness by the cult, who is not only his subject of investigation, but also they're actually there taunting him and tormenting him. But in the end, he comes out okay. He survives, mm-hmm. I think. I think? It's got a bit of a question mark at the end, but...
Yeah, I would say... I would phrase it that way, too. Yeah. Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is like a Lovecraftian mm-hmm. type.
I did want to talk about, before we get into our analysis, I wanted mm-hmm. to just briefly touch on Lovecraft, if you...
Yes.
Are you? How much do you know about
H.P. Lovecraft?
Not much. Or his works?
Very little. I mean, mm-hmm. I've seen a couple Lovecraft type movies. Mm-hmm. I know about Cthulhu.
Yeah.
But I don't know as much. And I watched Older Gods. I keep wanting to call it Elder Gods.
Because that's what I wrote down.
Yes. Well, no, also, isn't that in Cthulhu what they call? I thought it was like a thing.
Oh, I don't know that.
But I watched it with my partner, Tegan, and she knows a lot more about Cthulhu and Lovecraft than I do. Yeah. And apparently this movie, she said, fell into a lot of the typical tropes mm-hmm. of a Lovecraft movie. Like, yeah. You know, he's learning everything through something else or narration right. or like right. that seems like a trope. And like, yep. I wish I could remember the other ones that she said.
Yeah.
But I don't.
So let's start with H.P. Lovecraft. Yeah. H.P. Lovecraft writing... primarily, like, most of his memorable works came out in the 1920s, published in a magazine called Weird Tales. He was a resident of Providence, Rhode Island, and he was obsessed with cosmicism, the concept of human smallness in terms of the vastness of the universe, right? What we get our term cosmic horror from people who described his work in this way, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's like this whole genre of horror that is, yeah, again, just really about undermining our own sense of human importance in the face of something much larger, much more ancient. And the movie talks about it pretty directly by referencing the primordial fear, mm-hmm. right? And they have a whole sort of deluge where they just explain that to you as the viewer. So Lovecraft does, he publishes, like we said, The Call of Cthulhu, and a number of, like, the Dunwich Horror, a number of other stories that have been adapted in different ways. And the whole Cthulhu mythos has been taken up by, you know, new authors and writers mm-hmm. and filmmakers and stuff. And it's kind of become its own, like, pseudo, like, it, like a genre, or, like, I'm not going to call it a franchise because those have to be like produced by the same people, but yeah. like yeah like almost like yeah just the figure of Cthulhu is very recognizable mm-hmm. right
I would when say it's almost like its own genre, because like there, you know, you could walk into like Spencer Gifts or like a weird yeah. merchandise store and there will be like Cthulhu things, but it won't be related to like any specific
right
thing. It's just the creature Cthulhu.
Right, right.
So yeah, I think that makes sense. Like it's its own thing. Yeah.
Yeah. The most recent one that I remember chuckling at was a t-shirt. It was like an election year t-shirt that had Cthulhu on it. And it said, Lord Cthulhu. And then the slogan was, why vote for the lesser evil? You
know? Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. I thought it was really good.
Oh my God.
So Lovecraft himself dies in relative obscurity. He was not really a very popular writer during his lifetime. His work was resurrected in the 1970s by people studying it. And he's now regarded as one of those like foundational, I mean, even though people, it certainly like wasn't foundational at the time. He was just kind of this weird writer producing little stories in this obscure magazine. People kind of regard him as one of the like originators of like a big horror thought.
Right? I can see that, yeah.
Which this movie, ordinary gods, older gods.
We're just going to call it all kinds
I'm
of
so
things.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, I'm so sorry. David.
Oh my God.
And we were contacted by whoever was doing promo for the movie. Yeah, they described it as a Lovecraftian, I want to say.
They did. Or cosmic. Yeah, they used the word cosmic and surreal.
Yeah. So these things were on purpose, right?
Yes.
We have in this movie the concept of the origin, who is like, you know, a Cthulhu-like god who this cult believes is asleep. And his dreams are producing our reality. Mm-hmm. And so what they're trying to do is like sacrifice enough people basically to wake him back up.
Yes.
And they believe that they will be elevated to his whatever version of the afterlife is, right?
Yeah. Which apparently I think that, remember that was another trope, like cults, the idea, which I guess makes sense because it's like, I don't know what Lovecraft was doing because I don't really know anything about Lovecraft, but in a way, it's like religion, you know?
Yeah.
And religion is kind of a cult. Oh, man, I'm going to get canceled.
This is like the 15th time you've been canceled on this show. So I wouldn't worry about it.
That's true. It's true.
Yeah. Religion is an interesting thing to think about in relation to this movie, too, right? Because, like...
Well, they're worshiping a...
Yeah, well, but also I think in abstract, religion is a way for people to try to rectify. It's a way for them to try to resolve the tension of the primordial fear, right?
Mm-hmm.
That idea that we are very small and relatively insignificant in the universe, and anything could happen to us at any time, and our existence will really make no. The world will not shrug all that much at our passing, right? So religion, I feel like, attempts to explain that in a way that refutes, or at least major world religions try to refute that idea that we are significant, insignificant. But this is a religion that tries to embrace that in a sort of nihilistic way.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Okay, cool. So let's talk about then, should we get into analysis?
Yeah, let's do it.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
You go first.
Now, to be fair, okay, so... as per usual, my notes are shit. So as I was watching it, I know in the description and in the email that Wagyu Films sent us, they mentioned guilt. I decided not to do that. So bad fathers.
No,
we did the same thing. Yes. This has never happened. But maybe we have different things because I took notes of all the bad fathers that I saw depicted. Do you mind if I go through my list?
No,
okay. So they're not probably in order. Again, notes are shit and on my phone. But basically, when Chris is on the phone with Mrs. Duffy, she mentions that Billy had father issues. Chris said that he protected Billy against his, quote, piece of shit father. So I would assume abusive in some ways. I think he mentioned standing between them at some point. Chris's phone is reciting voice messages towards the end, one where he's fired and then one where his wife is angry about what terrible things he said to her and their child. And of course, he leaves his pregnant wife, who's about to have their child at any day on TV. The follower slash father murders his wife and child. Mm. Let's see. This might be a bit of a stretch, but the older god that speaks to Chris, it's implied it's the same older god that spoke to Billy. So the god kind of equals the father and Billy kind of equals the son. Yeah, and Billy killed himself. At the end,
I think when you're talking about the older god, do you mean
the one like that voice that's coming over? It's like when Chris is in the house,
but it's speaking English to him. It's not the like weird ancient language. No.
It's speaking. It's speaking English to him. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got fatherly vibes.
So with like him leaving his pregnant wife at home, there's a pattern of men cheating on or leaving their wives on or around the time they have children.
Yep.
But at the end, Billy says to Chris, quote, "You'll be a good father because you always looked after me." So it ends with the prospect or possibility of a good father figure. Right. However, I don't think that the movie, I was trying to tie together the father, what are they trying to say about bad fathers? And the closest I could get to was abandonment, but it seemed too simplistic.
Yeah.
I think they wanted to say something, but I don't know if they knew what to say. Mm. And then at the end, I have no reason to believe that Chris would be a good father.
Right.
He actually seems like he'd be a shit father.
Right. So, Jen, I had such a similar experience to you. I felt like the movie was signaling so hard that it was about guilt and the consequences of guilt surrounding suicide.
Mm.
But I just didn't feel like it delivered on that
same
theme. Yes. And I was so much more compelled by questions of fatherhood in the movie than any of the guilt stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So like the guilt thing I feel like is a little undercut, actually. Like the movie undercuts itself, right? Like it's supposed to be a movie about guilt surrounding someone's suicide, which is a for real thing that a lot of people do. I don't know if you've ever had anyone close to you commit suicide. I have, right? And there's like there's just this real sense of like, oftentimes I think for a lot of people, having missed something or like, was there something you should have done or been there or, you know, but the fact that Billy, you know, was acted upon by this cult and, you know, ultimately probably would not have actually committed suicide. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's a very, it betrays the topic, I think.
Yes.
Because like, it would actually be a huge relief for anyone who's like dealt with a suicide close to them. It would be a huge relief to find out that like there was some foul play involved, right? Like obviously you're still going to deal with the grief in the morning and stuff, but like there's less confusion.
It's different. You know? It's different. Because then you're suddenly like, oh, he fought back. Like, he didn't want to kill himself.
Right.
Like,
one of the hardest things about processing suicide is like the confusion about like, how would this person do this, right? Or why would they do this? So, like, the fact that that turns out to not really be the case in the end, I'm like, is this really a movie about guilt? Another thing that really betrays the idea of guilt about suicide is the fact that Chris gets to see Billy again, right? He gets to talk to Billy again, and he gets to have his guilt absolved by Billy again, which no one who has ever been through a suicide of a loved one will ever get to have. You know what I mean? And that's part of the real struggle of that, right?
He gets closure.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that is, it's fiction. It's fake. It's not real.
Which undermines the guilt theme.
Yeah. Yes, of course. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And the movie's last line just really sits sour for me in that way as well. They say, you know, as Chris is lying in the hospital, he sees a paradoxical dead bird fly in his doorway in the hospital room. And he says, "For those of you who ignore that friend with crazy stories about the end of the world, maybe, just maybe, you should listen."
What are we saying here?
Right, like, right.
And the guilt part, it's mentioned in the like description that we were given too. So right. I thought that it was going to carry
the
through.
Movie, everything about the movie itself, the mm-hmm. packaging, the marketing is really signaling that it's like trying to be this movie about guilt.
Yeah.
But I don't think it is.
I agree.
I think that it's a movie, you know, sometimes when you make art, and I'm sure you experience this too, you are really trying to, you go at it with a great intentionality, but you only discover later through reflection that you're like really talking about something else totally.
Yes. You know? And sometimes it's not something that you even intended or wanted, but like other people will say it.
Right.
And
right.
then it's like, oh, what I actually intended this whole time doesn't come through.
It doesn't come through. And it seems like your brain was communicating something without your approval.
Yes.
Right. Like, like you have to acknowledge that some part of you did do all this, right? And that, you know, it must reflect in some way actual feelings that you were having.
That's interesting.
You know?
Yeah.
So by that way, it's almost like when you have those experiences, there's like a self-discovery to it, I think. Hmm. You know?
Yeah. You kind of reflect on yourself and it's like, okay, why did these... Like, and that's actually really interesting. Like, why for this... Question. Is the writer also the director?
Yes, okay. Writer-director.
So, why,
David A. Roberts.
Why for David A. Roberts did the theme of bad, you know, fathers or fatherhood in general come through? Like, why was that, like, overpowering the guilt?
I don't know. I think that, you know, and I also reject trying to too closely tie the artist's biography the movie.
No.
But, like... I think that it's interesting. And to me, it like smacks of one of those experiences for myself that I've had. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where I've tried to make a thing and then found out it was something else.
Oh, so, I've definitely done that.
If I could, I feel like I want to just put a spin on what you've already identified, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the part where I'm going to start to be more positive about the movie because I feel like I've been very critical of it and I'm so sorry, David.
I like that we're specifically apologizing to David, but not Wagyu Films that reached out to us. David, I hope you listen to this.
David, listen, man. I respect you as a human. So I think that this is about responsibility and like in the face of new parenthood, right? I think that it's about staring down the barrel of that enormous life change that is coming and some of the feelings that are evoked or can be evoked and I think are pretty commonly evoked by that experience. Mm-hmm. So just to kind of big, you know, contextual idea, there's often this intense vertigo feeling that I think a lot of people feel when they become a parent. You realize the sheer chaos of the world. Insanity can actually like feel like an enticing alternative sometimes.
Oh my God.
Well, you realize that the world is fucked up. You don't want your child to become a part of that, right?
That's interesting, yeah.
People can understand that, but I think you also like realize it in a different kind of visceral way, right? There's no way to control or prevent your child from experiencing pain, potentially to severe detriment to. Like, that's a thing that you realize and you... Billy, as you've identified, is often described in terms of his father's inability to toe a parental line. There's so much about his like father couldn't hold it together, so Billy had no home, right?
Mm-hmm.
Chris is doing the same thing. His wife is pregnant. He knows that this thing is coming, and yet he's abandoning her without warning to explore a cosmic cult, right? So early in the film, he falls asleep, and the thing that he says right before he falls asleep is, "What was I thinking?" Right? Which to me is like a very big, like, acknowledging the irresponsibility of his actions, sort of in that weird twilight moment between waking and sleeping. And a move that I can't decide if it's hilarious or brilliant, or maybe both. So good for you, David. like after his first like sequence of scares in the cottage.
Okay.
Everything kind of like lulls for a second, and then his phone rings. And the shot we have is of his wife, whose name is Karen, is calling his phone. Yes. And we get one of those like horror jump scare soundtrack, like brum, right?
Yeah.
Right. It like puts this idea that like Karen is this haunting entity in the movie, like as much a source of fear and tension as the cult itself, like by what the movie, how the movie's treating that shot. Because I have to talk about dicks. I feel like in every, the last couple of episodes, I've had to talk about dicks. I promise when I analyze literature, I don't always talk about dicks, but
maybe that's a new category of the podcast.
Where's the dick?
Where's
the dick? What a great idea. All right. We're keeping that. So when Billy, or when Chris is sleeping, mm-hmm. we see that imagery that we were just praising, and you know, it's a big blue, like, circle. It's like an ovum, mm-hmm. right? The monolith is like a gigantic phallus coming out of the sky.
God, yes.
Right. Descending upon a worshiper in the creepy tree, right? Which we haven't really talked about yet, where people are, Chris literally says that they are lynched there.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting choice of words, right?
Yes.
So he says that they're lynched there. We see shots of people hanging from it. Mm-hmm. It is the actual, like, cover art of the movie.
It is,
like
a
depiction of that, mm-hmm. right? I think that, like, evokes that sort of, like, strange fruit Billie Holiday imagery. But in that, you have the concept of fruit and fruition and
something
new life.
And like something, yeah,
exactly, right?
Yeah.
So it's more pregnancy, but, like, with a sense of foreboding.
Mm-hmm. Right, but it's like Mother Nature giving birth to, like,
yeah,
new
exactly,
life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And these are the things that are haunting his dreams, right?
That's
so it's
true.
Like,
yeah.
They're his anxieties that are, like, surfacing when he's unconscious. Mm-hmm. So, like, the question, I think, really becomes, will Chris follow in Billy's father's footsteps, embracing chaos and the primordial fear of parenthood, or will he resist that instinctual flight, right? Will he mm-hmm. come back to reality here?
And at the end, I think it's meant to for us to believe that he will resist it. How did you feel about that moment?
I don't know, because it is, those events are so ambiguous to me.
Yeah.
It seems to me that he really does kill somebody mm-hmm. there in the field, right?
Yeah.
However, accidentally or reflexively or in self-defense.
But it seems like he really does.
Seems like it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get all that Cthulhu, like, you know, you have opened the door, and, you know, all this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I truly don't know. And as you mentioned, right, he is not, at the end of the movie, he is not back with his wife.
No. He even says, like, oh, I'll be there. And he still does all this other bullshit after he talks to her on the phone.
Yeah. Well, and you know, at the end of the movie, too, in that last shot, he is on the phone with his wife.
Yes.
And the very last thing we see is him becoming distracted from that phone call where she's still talking.
You're right.
And he's now looking at this dead bird and not paying any attention to what she's saying. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know. I guess I read it kind of bleak at the end.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
So, yeah. So, I guess despite nearly succumbing to the primordial chaos of the cultists in the beginning, I feel like he does reject it when he stabs himself in the neck. Like,
yes.
That's an action of rejection.
Yeah.
He encounters Billy in that quote-unquote heaven, whatever we want to call it,
mm-hmm.
who reminds him of his responsibility to his son.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, that's true.
There's like a... It's kind of a device that's used a lot. There's like a divine intervention device, right? Right, like right when he would have been... Because, like, you could also see how him committing suicide by stabbing himself in the neck is an embracing of the primordial fear instead
That's
of fatherhood,
true.
Right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So he's revived, obviously. And, you know, I think my last point, we've mostly pretty much covered here, like, just that in the end, we experience the intrusion of chaos again with the paradoxical dead bird in the hospital room. The message is that the work of remaining tethered to your kid's life is in fact work.
Yeah.
Right? And that the temptation to abandon it for chaos will ever be present.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a real thing that mm-hmm. resonates with me as a parent. And I suspect, you know, lots of other parents. And I think we've already covered my last question, but it was, how do we feel then that we do not actually see Chris reunite with his wife, but in fact seem to become distracted by that dead bird in the end?
I think it would have been better either to have her at the hospital or cut it earlier, like not have any interaction with her at the end and just leave things more open-ended.
Right.
I kind of feel like the scene where he talks to Billy and things are supposed to be like, I don't know. I felt like that scene actually wasn't necessary for me.
You know, I think I've talked myself into liking it, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. But it really does have to do with, like, the dynamic between him and his wife, I think, that, like, makes that work for me. And the fact that he becomes distracted at the end.
Oh, no, that scene I didn't mind. Oh, I mean, the one where he talks to Billy in Limbo Heaven.
Oh, yeah.
That scene I could have just done without.
Yeah. Do you have any other thoughts? Analytical thoughts? Or?
No.
Should we critique?
Yeah, let's critique. Well, first, I just want to say, for a low-budget film, I actually thought it was visually better than it was written. Visually, I was like, the lighting is great. Some of the, like, framing, when he's on the phone talking with Mrs. Duffy, which I was like, oh, God, there's too many phone calls. But that shot where the light is, like, hitting the wall and like, he's on the chair, yeah, I was like, it's nice. It's a really good shot. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just talking about visuals for a minute, I thought that, like, there were a lot of great surreal moments for something that didn't have a big budget. Actually, do we know what the budget was on this?
I'm sure we can find out. So, dear listener, when we were inquired about this film, we were also given a number of supporting, documentaries.
Oh, yes, which I watched
did
none of.
Did you watch them?
No.
Oh, you didn't watch any of them. Okay.
So, sorry, Wagyu Films.
I did watch them. And particularly I found enlightening was the cinematographer talking about, some of the lenses and lighting choices that they used.
Cool.
Which, speaks to that. There was a lot of natural light in the movie where they used, like, well-chosen lenses to capture what light was available, but also conveyed, in many cases, a sense of human smallness in a vast blackness of the world, which was really, I thought, very cool. And that shot that you're referring to where he's on the phone on the chair and the light is coming through, that was all, it's natural light, and it's
That's
just really
cool.
Nice. Yeah, it's really cool, you know?
I thought the phone calls were not great.
Phone calls were bad. Why were phone calls so bad?
I don't know.
I don't think it was the acting. I think it was the writing. I think the
right. I agree with you.
Yeah, I don't blame the actors.
No.
I did not think... I thought that most of the movie was better written than the phone calls, and I don't know why.
I agree. The phone calls almost felt like... It didn't feel natural.
Yeah.
Like how people would... Especially the wife.
All the wife,
Mrs.
but
Duffy
also
too.
Jonathan. Mrs. Duffy
Jonathan,
felt like the most realistic one.
Jonathan was bad.
John was bad. The wife was pretty bad. And I thought Mrs. McDuffy? Duffy?
Mrs. Duffy? I don't know. I thought she was the best.
I thought she was the best one.
Yeah. She was the most believable to me as like a loving,
like,
older mother figure.
But yeah, that wife was just like, I'm mad at you, but, oh, okay, you're dealing with your grieving friend. Come on home, trooper. You know, like this real,
I love when she's like, well, your friend is dead and I'm alive. Like, those were not like the exact words,
right,
but I was
right.
Damn, his friend just died.
She cuts hard,
what's happening? Like, you should at least be like, oh my God. I was like, what's happening? Yeah.
I did not believe that... Chris was an American. Sorry.
Was he covering up an accent?
No offense, Rory Wilson. I believe he was.
Yeah, I caught it a couple times.
I can tell, like, sort of deep. It's there's something with the pat. Like, it's not sinusy enough to be an American accent. There's something
too
low.
Nasal.
It's like, yeah, there's something. But all that said, I do think that he did a pretty good job overall in the movie. Like,
I thought Billy was... not bad of an actor.
I thought it was pretty good. You just didn't like that scene.
What, the
heaven scene?
No, I just thought it was a little elementary writing. But the parts where we see him on the video, I thought he was pretty good. I do think that, like, the last video we see of him, which is halfway through the movie, went on a little too long for me.
Okay.
And it started to drag at that point for me. And then it picked up afterwards, but I thought, I was like, if we had just broken that up into maybe two or three and like cut to other scenes or something, like, I don't know.
You know who I liked in this movie was, and it was a smaller part, but Lindsay Bennett Thompson played Paula, Billy's like partner. Who like gets,
oh yeah,
we only really see her in the film, in the video footage of like,
you're right.
But I thought she was good. Yeah, she was scary.
I agree.
I thought that was good. Should we just give it the rating? What do we think?
Yeah, we can give it the rating.
Okay,
let's do it.
I'll go first.
You go first. Yeah.
I am going to give it a loving 7. So I, you know, there are flaws to it. I don't, but I also am like, I'm trying to be mindful that it is a, that it's an indie production.
Yeah.
That it feels like, it feels a little bit like a labor of love to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even, I'm not sure if it really was, but like, it feels like this thing that, that, it feels like this thing that David Roberts like wanted to make, you know, and he's just really kind of like putting himself into it a little bit. So it felt like it had like a personal touch to it, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And, I like that. I like when that happens. And as an independent producer of art myself, you know, I know that a lot of times things just don't exactly pan out in the absolute optimal way that you wanted them to, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do genuinely think a lot of this was really scary.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was good. As I mentioned, I liked a lot of those Cthulhu-y visuals. Yeah, so I'm going to give it a 7. I genuinely think there's a lot in this movie that is fun and worth watching. And the flaws perhaps betray the indiness of it, but I think are worth overlooking. And I have to give it a passing score. I forgot to mention to you.
What?
I've decided something about my rating system.
Okay. Which let's is, hear it.
if I feel that the film conveys a cohesive theme or message of any kind, I'm going to give it a passing score of above 6.5.
So like,
or 6.5 or above.
So not passing would be a, below a 6.5.
This is like a 100-point rating school idea.
Okay. Right? Yeah.
So,
okay.
So like I'm thinking about,
so like, we're not like going up to 10 with this, or are we?
Yeah, it is 10.
Okay.
It's out of 10, but I'm thinking about when I was in school and it was out of 100 points.
Okay.
And
okay.
A 65 was passing.
Okay,
it was a D,
enough.
Right?
Okay, yeah.
So 6.5 is,
okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So for me, yeah, I think if there's a cohesive vision, I'm going to give it at least a 6.5.
Okay.
Or a cohesive theme. And I think that there is that. I think that there is a message about new parenthood and the cosmic fears that it inspires. And so there you have it.
So. Okay. So I'm not going to do the passing.
That's fine. No, because this is, that's a purely me thing. You don't have to do that.
Well, I feel like for me, if it's above a 5, that's pretty good. If it's below a 5, that's not great. Gotcha. If it's at a 5, I'm neutral. It's like one of those, like, you know, like...
like there's a smiley face on one
yeah,
end
yeah, yeah.
and a sad face on the other
and
end for you.
And a meh face in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So this movie, I'm going to give a 6. So,
okay. All right. So that's like on the smiley end.
Yeah. It's on the smiley end.
Slightly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it's worth watching. I think that I would say if you are a horror fan, Cthulhu fan, watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I think visually it is better than the writing. So the visuals actually bumped it up for me because of how good the visuals were. And I remember like we watched it and at the end it was like, yeah, David
Roberts.
Roberts. Why can I not remember that?
I think it's because he's got two first names. You know, I think.
Oh,
it's,
my God,
yeah.
You're right. Yes.
Yeah.
Is it David A. Roberts?
It's David A.
I don't
Roberts.
Know why I remember the middle initial. But sorry, I would watch another movie that he put out.
I would, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, fun fact there. I went looking at his biography. This is his first, like.
It's his first movie,
it's
right?
It's his first feature film.
Which,
so that also, for me, is like, okay.
Yes.
You know, like.
for his first film, mm-hmm. I actually think that this is like I like surreal, weird shit.
Yeah.
So like all those surreal, weird things, yeah. I was like, oh, I'm in. Like, yeah. This is great. I like cults. I like all right. that shit. I like a movie that has minimal characters.
Right.
So I liked that there weren't that many. It honestly feels like one of those movies that could be a play or something.
Right, right.
Like, I really enjoy
it does,
that.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, because most of it takes place in the house and then mm-hmm. kind of outside. Mm-hmm. So I really, really like that aspect of it. I think just, you know, a couple things bumped it down for me, which we mentioned.
Right.
But, yeah, I would 100% watch another one of his movies to see what he does.
I agree, and I can see myself, based on this movie, following David A. Roberts' work
mm-hmm.
going forward. Like, I think that he has a clear vision. I want to see what he does when he's got maybe a little bit more money.
Yes.
Maybe more people, you know, different people involved. Some mm-hmm. of them different involved. Yeah, I can see myself watching more of his movies.
Yeah, 100%.
Definitely under those conditions. And yeah. He's got a sci-fi coming up.
Oh.
So that's pretty cool, at least according to...
Like a movie? Like a sci-fi movie?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's directing something called Patriarch.
Oh, that's interesting. After we talked about the whole father theme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
Which is a horror sci-fi.
I'll watch it. Yeah. Yep.
Who's the hottest?
You know, there were not that many people in this movie.
You have not a lot of choice.
So, okay. We need to lay out our choices. Chris?
Billy.
The guy with, like, no bottom of his face.
No bottom of his face, yep. Mm-hmm.
We got the cop. We got the other cop guy who he kills.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a woman who is also...
Like a cultist woman who's...
Open the door.
Light the way.
Yeah. I don't know who was the hottest. Do you know? Do you have your set? I need to think about this for a minute.
We saw an awful lot of Chris without his shirt
on. I know!
On.
But I actually...
He's thin. He's cut. I mean...
I'm going to go with Billy, though.
Billy. Tell me about that. Why?
I don't know. His face.
He's got that cute English boy
yeah,
thing going on,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let me do a hot take here. How about the guy who, very minor part, is being sacrificed by the cult? And Billy and Paula walk in on it. And Billy says... The crazy thing about it was that he seemed to be enjoying being sliced open.
Oh, that's right.
That's fucking kinky.
That's right? Amazing. I love it.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. That is kinky. I will say it was fun watching something so indie, like knowing that there was not much of a budget and like this is his first film and like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I do want to mention, before we wrap up, unless you have other thoughts to convey on this.
No.
Because it is, you know, it's an indie, and I feel like we should all support independent art. Even though I feel like we've been kind of critical about a lot of these things and have poked fun at it a little bit, I do genuinely love that it was made, and I do love that... that parts of it are good,
100%,
you know?
Yeah.
And so I want to put out there that people should watch it and that you can stream it on Apple TV and Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do think that it is worth a viewing.
I do too.
If you haven't checked it out, or if you have any interest in like cosmic horror, Cthulhu mm-hmm. at all, you know.
I think like we would not say. To watch it if we didn't think it was worth it.
Yeah, and I will say, yeah, if I thought that this was absolute shit,
yeah.
I would not be saying this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But I also agree, like, it's good to support, like, indie filmmakers, indie artists.
Well, yeah, because, like, I think that those people are often a little bit more in tune to what, like, real people are going through. You know, like, not that I don't love a good, like, Christopher Nolan film mm-hmm. or something, but, like... You know, at a certain point, people who are wealthy and famous and like successful are removed from a certain reality. You know what I mean? And so there becomes more of a struggle for them, I think, to get reacquainted with mm-hmm. that and to present something that's relatable. And so independent art is great in that it's often kind of effortlessly relatable. And yeah, it feels like it speaks to something that real people actually deal with, you know?
Yes. No, I completely agree. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And as an artist, I would say it feels good when people like look at your, you know, yeah. whatever you've made or like for you, like listen to the music or like, you know, I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
It always feels good when people, you know, people out there have like experienced it because you right. like put it out in the world and that's what like you
right.
want. Yeah.
Right. Right. I agree. Cool.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts you want to?
Nope. No other thoughts.
All right. Well, this has been lovely. Mm-hmm. Older gods, y'all.
All right.
Go watch it.